I'm Matchmaker Maria, the founder of Agape Match. For over a decade, I've combined four generations of family matchmaking tradition with modern relationship psychology, behavioral science, and dating trends. With this unique expertise, I answer your dating and relationship questions and interview experts to give you the tools to find or keep the love of your life. This is Ask a Matchmaker. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. Did you miss me? I miss you too. I did take 2 weeks off, didn't I? But it's okay. You got to listen to my favorite episodes. The first one being Dr. Romney, who's like incredible. And the next one with Dr. Winsberg. I mean, you know, you can't go wrong when it's the rebroadcast episodes, but this episode is a fresh new hotline episode. And my special guest this week is former stand-up comedian, Selena Topic, now the creator of popular Insta and Twitter NYT Vows, where she lampoons the New York Times wedding section and all the waspies and New York City elites and more. And of course, she is the creator and the host of Two Wick Minimum, America's first podcast about candles. Every time I read that out loud, I cannot, like, my brain is like tickled. Anyway, I am so happy you're here, Selena. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker live hotline.
Hi, Maria. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. It's been a while. I had you on the show like 2 years ago.
Yeah. I just looked it up last night. It was October 2020. Yeah.
What?
I know, it was episode 16 of your pod. It was like when you were just a little bait. Like, I mean, you have blown up so much. It's so impressive. I love it.
That's like funny. That's funny to me.
I know.
It was so nuts. You know, it is. I follow all of your internet stuff. So if you don't know, I mean, I just said it in her little bio, but it's really important. I want you to do this for me. Okay. If you are on Twitter, you must go follow NYT Vows. And if you're on Instagram, same thing, because Selena has a fantastic way of really calling out the privilege, from the vow sections of the New York Times. And it must be a lot harder now too, because the New York Times vows section has like definitely shifted in the pandemic. Now it's like normal people.
Oh, it's been impossible.
And their stories.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I mean, it's like there are people who seem nice and good. And I'm like, you're making this so hard for me to make fun of, because yeah, I mean, I started it about 7 years ago, I think, when it was all just like Mayflower talk, name drops of boarding schools, Ivy Leagues. And so like, so I crafted this character who's like this sort of upper echelon old grand dame, and she's just looking down on everyone. And I love writing in that voice. But honestly, in the past like 2 years, it's become really difficult because, yeah, they have either like really kind-hearted people with just fascinating stories, or stories of real triumph and hardship. And like,
Of course,
I'm never going to mock those, you know, like, I mean, lately they've had a lot of people with big Instagram followings, and
oh, really?
Yeah. So I kind of will gently mock that, but honestly, it's not quite as much fun as it used to be because the people aren't as
there's
insufferable.
There's no more like the thirds and the fourths.
Yes. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
It's, I mean, like, you used to be like Frank Abagnale the fifth, and you're who?
I know. And it was always, yeah, like Whitney Kensington from New Canaan, you know, like, and you'd talk about her parents' boat. Like, I mean, I miss that stuff.
You know, the funniest thing for me is like what you just said too, is like the shift, and how there's like another shift, which like they now show like influencers and their wedding vows. And that's nice. That's good for them. But at the same time, it's like some of the most influential people that I know, they're either not on Instagram or they have less than 10,000 followers on Instagram. Yeah. And like, there's no better representation of this than this. There's this, if you check it out, there's this Instagram called Brilliant Minds. This is an organization out of Sweden, and they really do invite the most brilliant minds around the world every year for like this thing, right? It's like very haughty toddy. I think it seems like it is, but it also seems like they get a lot of things done. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, because like I love looking at the photos of like who went. And then as you click into like every single person's profile, it's like, oh yeah, this person invented this chip thing.
Wow.
2000 followers.
Wow.
Oh, this person is like the creator of this insane invention that we use every single day, 4,000 followers. Wow. And it's like, it just tells me that's like, wow, like followings don't mean shit.
Oh no, not at all. And I mean, and I think there's a lot of damage that is done by this culture in which you perform your life. You don't just live your life, you know, and
right.
And everyone engages with social media differently. But I get fed so many reels where they recommend them to me. And maybe this is it's sort of a representing how I am, but it'll be people being like, here's what I eat in a day. And it's just like, this is bizarre to me, you know?
So in speaking of that, right? My algorithm also shows me feeds of that stuff of like, get ready with me stuff. And like, look, no shade on that stuff. I'm sure when I'm hosting a retreat in Greece this summer and I'm actively looking. So shout out to anyone who can do this. I am looking for someone to join me in Greece to help me with like the video editing portion. So I've said that to some of my friends and they're sending me like these major influencers. And I'm like, no, I don't want, I'm the person in front of the camera. I don't want the influencer to come. I want someone to take video and help me edit it. Cause I don't have time to do that if I'm hosting a retreat.
Exactly.
And in that conversation, I find it like, I keep encountering quote unquote dating influencers whose entire content revolves around them going on dates, getting ready for dates, being on a date, like the whole thing. And there's a few, I'm not targeting one person. Right. But I, as a matchmaker, I cannot help but think like, who is this content? Who is it attracting? Who is it for?
Yeah.
Is there an incentive to get into a relationship if it helps if numbers are important to you and this is like, what's going to help increase your numbers? It's like you dating and constantly creating this new content.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, where's the balance here? Because I'll see them where it's like, oh, I have 150,000 followers or 500,000 followers on TikTok. And I love that they write that on the bio of their Instagram. I love that. It's like my favorite part because it's like, no, Instagram is not killing. I mean, excuse me. TikTok is not killing Instagram. TikTok is killing Netflix.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I'm never on Netflix now. Right. So it's like, that's what TikTok killed for me.
Yeah.
But like Instagram, like if you're still writing your TikTok numbers on Instagram, Instagram is going to be fine. Yeah. But anyway, so they'll write that stuff down as if I'm like, but who is this for? Like, it's definitely a struggle. So I think there's still enough there for you, Selena, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause like, and I love that I have no corporate alignment. Like this is just me writing jokes for me, you know? And so,
but also if anyone heard you in apparently episode 16, like you actually come from that weird dynamic of Manhattan. Yeah. Like you grew up around these people. Are you also a Mayflower person?
No, we're not a Mayflower family, tragically. But yeah, I mean, my mom grew up on the Upper East Side, went to Nightingale Bamford. Her mom was a dancer in the Ziegfeld Follies, which is Ziegfeld Follies is a little low class, but my grandmother married up and out to the Upper East Side. And yeah, like my mom's debutante ball was at the Waldorf, you know, like, I mean, just all these things. So I do like, it's nice that I can drop these names, you know, like, especially back in the day, you know, I would talk about going out to East Hampton to the, you know, Devon Yacht Club or the Maidstone. And, you know, like if you know, you know, like people. Who
so
know
do
that
people,
stuff.
Do you feel like people still care about like the scene?
I think some people really still do. Yeah. But I wonder if it does seem like, in particular in weddings, it seems like Vogue weddings have really become, that is the pinnacle. If you are like wealth, old money, maybe you run your own fashion line, you want to be in Vogue weddings now.
You run your own fashion line. Oh, almost, I mean, they all do. Fashion lines are like.
Oh, it's always just rich.
It's just a trust fund.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Coming through.
Oh, that was always my favorite joke to make, you know, just to be like, act as though your parents' seed money was, you know, just a lucky break, you know, like just all that kind of stuff.
I have like, it's funny because I was recently looking at someone who had launched like a fashion line. I don't want to say when, but like in the pandemic. And I was just like, there's no fucking way this person is selling $300 t-shirts. Like it just, no, like that's just not happening. And it's like, oh yeah, that's who her parents are. Okay.
Oh, 100%.
Like, that makes perfect sense. Now like maybe it's her, maybe there are people who are buying $300 shirts, but also like, I don't know if this person's necessarily worrying about like how they're going to pay their distributor.
Oh, completely.
But maybe it's just me being a hater. Am I being a hater? There are people listening in live. So if you think I'm being a hater, you got to tell me in the chats and I'll wear that Haterade badge with honor, but just tell me if I'm being a hater. I just think I'm observing.
Oh yeah. No, I know what you mean though. Cause that's how I felt when I was doing stand-up. There were some people who they were for money. So they never had to have a 9-to-5. So they could always be free to work on packets, to, you know, be writing jokes, to be auditioning, whatever. And, you know, and a lot of them are very successful now and I wish them all the best.
Okay. But, wait, hold up. Okay, I was just thinking about this last weekend. So I need to know, at what age did you discover that there are your peers? Like, and we're talking about in your 20s now, right? That like, oh, that person came from money and they were able to do those. Like at what point? Cause mine was like pretty disgustingly late to figure that out. So I want to know, like, when did you figure out, like, oh, so you grew up in Manhattan. So you probably surrounded by this way longer than I was.
No, I grew up in the Boston suburbs, but
serious?
Yeah. But my mom is from here and my mom's whole side of the family is from here and very connected here. So no, but I grew up in the Boston suburbs, but I will tell Weston, it's a rich one. Okay. I mean, it's like, yeah, it's a bougie town.
All right.
But I feel like where I had sort of a rude awakening with what the wealth of my peers was when I went to college. Like
that's early.
Yeah. I mean, I was like 18. Yeah. And I remember I thought that I was pretty, you know, doing okay. And then I got to, and I loved Hamilton College. I loved it so much, but the wealth of my peers, I was shocked by, like, just the amount of people ordering J. Crew every day, you know, like, I mean, and
that's expensive.
Oh, it's expensive. And I mean, and this is back when you had to order from a catalog.
The 90s, like, yeah.
Exactly. You ordered from a catalog, you know,
Delilah's, like, shout out.
Oh my God. I loved, but you know, or who had, like, you know, brand new cars, just, or, you know, to discover, like, oh, so-and-so's dad owns this such and such company that you grew up knowing, you know, like, I was really stunned by that. But when did you learn, Maria?
So I want to give context to my college years, because I actually did go to like a pretty haughty-taughty university, like a college in Greece, in Athens. Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot of rich kids in my school, including, I think, like the daughter of like the CEO of EasyJet. Like, these were my classmates. Wow. So it was like pretty wealthy in there. And I understood they were wealthy, but they were also living with their parents because that's the culture in Greece. So like, mm-hmm. I had my own apartment. So I was the one hosting the party. So I was like the it girl. Like it was great. I didn't feel like I was like poor. I just felt like I was hustling and having a lot of fun. Right.
Yeah.
And then I moved to New York and I started to get hints. Like, I remember this one woman I was working with who was very nice. We were out to lunch and she was telling me she lives in the West Village. And I was like, wow, on my end thinking, like, I guess it's a massive salary bump when you're like the next grade paid over, like, you know, like, let's say I was like grade 5, she was grade 6, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, she must be making $80,000 more than I am to like being afford to live by herself in the West Village. It never crossed my mind that like this person had her parents helping her with her rent.
Yeah.
And then, so that's happening. And then simultaneously, like, there's a crash in Greece, mm-hmm. like an economic crash. I mean, there was one here too, but the Greece one was like quite devastating.
Yeah.
And like, you couldn't even take your money out of the bank. Like, it's pretty nasty. And what was funny to me there was, like, I was dating in New York, and if I told someone I was Greek, the men, and I'm talking about non-Greek men, would, first of all, and especially the finance guys, they would make fun of the fact that I'm Greek. They would call me lazy. They would call me poor. I was like, whoa, this is like really shocking. Like,
oh my God.
I was getting like these like little glimpses of like, okay. So for me, the final one was understanding my student loan debt. That's mm-hmm. when I realized, like, cause like I was dating and I happened to have student loan debt. And this example might help someone out there, and I hope it does. But I remember thinking, okay, I have 6-figure student loan debt. So I went to undergrad for free. My graduate school took all my debt. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, I remember dating guys and I was pretty like open about it. I was like, yeah, I have student loan debt. Like a lot of people do. Right.
Yeah.
And I would hear from men, I would prefer to date someone who doesn't have student loan debt. And what that's code for is, and this is where I would learn it around the age of 27. So I feel like I learned really late what that meant was, it's not that they'd prefer to date someone who paid off their debt by the age of 27. It's that I want to date someone whose parents would have paid for their grad school too.
Yeah. God.
And I mean, it took me a long time to figure that out. I was like, oh, okay. How does this affect you though? Like, my student loan debt, I pay it every single month.
Exactly.
It comes straight out of my, you know, my paycheck. Yeah, I
mean, it makes you seem so responsible that you have wrangled this and you're taking care of it. You know, like, God, that's so gross. Like, just gross.
It's gross. It's gross. Yeah. Now that I'm 38, I feel, and I've graduated 11 years. So I've been paying off my loans for 11 years.
Yeah.
Actually, no, parentheses. I have not paid my loans in the last 3 years because I don't have to, like, yeah. Until it starts again, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll take the interest. It's okay.
Yeah. I'm chilling. Yeah.
But like, it just came out of my paycheck and I was just so used to like, okay, that's the amount that comes out. Like, I don't even know what that looks like. I don't even, you know, it just, I've been responsible. I've never missed a payment. So it's like, why is this? But I guess that's what people mean when they say like shared values. For some people, that's like also like a shared inherited lifestyle that you may have received.
Oh yeah.
And that is a place, like I, you know, whatever. I don't know.
I mean, and it's fascinating too, because it's, you know, like, I think, you know, really rich people almost can't date outside of their bubble because it's just too awkward to be like, well, of course my parents are buying us a Cape house. What are you talking about? You know, like, it's just, I think it's hard to explain that to someone.
By the way, it is okay to be rich. That is like, that's fine. Good for you. I hope I become very rich one day and my kids can have their graduate school paid off too.
Yeah.
Right. But it's like when you realize, like, I think it's like when you realize that things are a little bit different. Like, I realize it now too. I used to feel like, I think I may have said this on a previous episode, like 3 years ago. When my mom was like really, really bad, like really sick in like October, 2021, that was the time they told us like she has like 3 weeks to live sort of thing. Mm. I was like really angry and resentful of every single influencer that was on my feed who's my age, who was living this carefree life with healthy parents, whose parents were also they looked wealthy enough that should shit hit the fan. They would not be responsible for taking care of their disabled parent. They would have a nurse or something. Mm-hmm. And in order to get out of the toxicity, I actually had to start unfollowing these people because I was getting angry. Yeah. I mean, that's my own insecurity, right? Like I totally own the fact that that's a me problem. I shouldn't be jealous of anyone. I'm sure everyone has their own trauma, baggage, whatever. But I remember just like, I think coming to terms with my new life.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is unfair. Like, what the hell, you know? And, but then now that I'm like, God, now that it's like, we're in the valley of all this. Now I'm like, man, I'm so lucky to have a partner who like sees, who's empathetic and helps me out with this. Like, like, holy shit. I'm like so freaking lucky. Like, I think of it this way now, like, wow, wait, what a way to test your relationship really early on to figure out if you're with a really incredible person.
Totally.
And I think when people say stuff like, oh, he has to be at least 6 feet tall, it's like, no, will he take care of the kids while you have to help your mother go to the facilities? Cause that's where it really matters. You know what I mean?
Oh, completely. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I think like, I met my boyfriend when I was 39, right before, you know, like New Year's Eve going into 2020.
Oh,
and yeah. And so like our lockdown was when we really got to know each other. He lost his job. He was a bartender, but like, similarly, I think it was just you know, when people will make this laundry list of like, I want this and this and this, like, I just think it's so important to be open to, you never know, like, you never know how, what shape or size or manifestation the guy might come to. And yeah, ultimately it's like, you want the one who will give you tenderness and be like, yeah, you have to take care of your mom. So, you know, in such an intense way, cool. Let me take the kids or, you know, let me give you a little TLC.
And also that's for me, like when I unlock like the word, at least for me, like in understanding relationship dynamics, it's stopped being like, I'm not in an equal relationship. It's not 50-50. It's an equitable relationship because we have to be both playing at the same plane to be at 50-50. And that's not possible. Like, you know, for instance, when George got COVID in December, right? I had to take over everything and that's okay. Mm-hmm. He's allowed to be sick. That's what equitable means though, is like, you know, I'm not expecting to take 50% on 50%. Sometimes it's going to be 70-30. Sometimes it's going to be 30-70. And like, we got to roll with those punches as they come.
Yeah.
And
I mean, and I know Michelle Obama has talked about that of like,
oh, has she?
And I've heard that
in her recent book.
It was in some speaking engagement she did get, but it may have been her recent book.
I haven't read her recent book. It's definitely on my, like, it's on my Audible right now to listen to, but let me tell you, Becoming.
Was that amazing? I haven't read it yet.
Oh my God. Well, I read it when my first kid was 1 year old, and that's my parenting Bible.
Wow.
So like that is not a book about becoming first lady. That is a book about how she was raised, and how she raised her kids at that time, at the age that they were when that book was published. And I was like, I remember like highlighting. I bought it on Audible because I wanted her to read it to me at some point. And
that's so cool.
I was like showing my husband, I was like, you know, Michelle did this and this, like as if I knew her. This is what I hate about Audibles when they're like autobiographies. You really establish a parasocial relationship with the author.
Yeah,
and then you get upset that I'm like, Michelle does not know who the hell I am.
Yeah.
Like I feel that way so about connected. Amy Poehler.
Yeah. I loved Yes Please. Yeah. I have it hardcover paperback, hardcover jacketed, which I never do because I'm a real paperback girl. But I bought hardcover jacketed because I love her.
Okay. I got the Audible.
Okay. Oh,
big mistake. Great.
Really?
Huge, because I fell in love with her. Yeah. And then once that book was over, I wept in the car on my way to Boston because I was dating still, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, or I was, maybe we were already married. But like, I remember I was driving to Boston when I was reading it and I started weeping because I was like, I'm not friends with this person in real life. And she has spent the last 15 hours talking in my ear. Like I'm telling you, autobiographies, they fuck with your head.
Yeah, that's so cool. Also, one real quick thing about that book in particular, I love when she talks about boundaries. Like, and she talks about it in the context of like, she appears on some TV show and the producer kind of like doesn't bully her, but is very demanding of her. And they do a full take of the thing she's supposed to do. And then it like, and she's done her job. And like, I guess they were like, oh wait, it didn't go that well. We want to redo the whole thing. And Amy is like, just like, I did what you asked. And like, right. And the producer is really like trying, like bullying her and trying to like, and she talks about setting boundaries. And like, I remember reading that years ago, like when it first came out and it was such an awakening for me about like boundaries and that like people will try to make their problem your problem. And it's so powerful to be like, you know what? I did my part. I wish you well. Bye-bye.
I love
you
that. Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So that Bossy Pants. That's so good by Tina Fey.
Yeah.
Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. That is the best Audible I've ever heard.
Oh, wow.
Like, cause he does all the accents.
Oh, that's cool.
Like the different South African accents. And I'm just like, what? Like, you know, like I'm listening to it. And I'm like, what is happening here? Like it was beautiful. Like the most beautiful Audible I've ever heard. And then also another one that's really good is Senator Gillibrand's Audible.
Off
the Sidelines.
Oh, that's cool. I really like her.
I read that in 2016 or something. That Audible will make you want to like run for office.
Run for office. Oh my God. That's like, so cool.
Because it talks about how she became a senator and like her first time, like it's just all these things. And I'm just like, she can do it. I can do it. Like, it's just like a very interesting approach to how she got into politics. And I'm like, I like her.
Oh, let's I think keep, she's great.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she went on NPR and she talked about, you know, the circumstances of when, you know, Al Franken was removed, whatever. And
right,
how,
yeah,
you know, like
one.
She was defending a number of women and people really came for her. And she was like, I don't think you realize, like, I don't know. I appreciated that she was very like, just kind of wouldn't back down and was like, listen,
she has her principles.
Yeah.
I think she's great. With her Audible was read by someone else.
Okay.
And then I didn't know that. And then I happened to like watch her on some show like a week later. And I was like, who's this? Like, I was like that. Cause you get used to a certain voice after like 12 hours, 17 hours. It's like, what do you mean? This is not her voice.
That's so
like,
funny.
Audibles are going to be the death of me. Oh my God, but I love them. I can't, if it's an autobiography, it always has to be Audible. Like I can't, I need to know in what context the writer is writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really good. So, well, anyway, you're here to do answer questions on your first hotline. And I'm so excited you're here. Are you ready to answer some dating questions?
Yes, I listened to some previous episodes, so I knew what I was getting into. And I'm so excited.
Excellent. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker hotline. How can we help you?
Hi, Maria. A little background on dating for me. I haven't dated much in the last couple of years. I'm 27 and I just was going through a lot personally and kind of just needed to take a break from dating and focus on some other areas of my life. So I'm kind of putting myself back out there right now, but I've also got a lot going on, I guess, still, but I'm trying to just not make excuses and just put myself out there more. So I guess the question primarily is like, if when you're in a place of transition or I guess a lot of it's career stuff for me. I'm currently working a 9-to-5, but also starting my own company. I'm sure you've probably dealt with this before, trying to date and do, and you're working a ton. So I guess my question is primarily focused around like dating when you're working a lot and you're, you know, you're not working 9-to-5, you're working like basically every spare moment you have outside of like your social life with friends and stuff. So yeah, any tips for that, I guess?
My immediate thought when I hear a question like this is like, this is a great time to do a long distance relationship with someone equally busy and you don't realize that. But Selena, do you have any how to resuscitate your dating life when you've worked really hard?
Yes.
When you were working really hard?
Yeah. I mean, I relate to this a lot because I have worked in publishing 9-to-5 for years and years and years. And I was doing stand up at night for years. And so, So I would try to find time to date and like, and I always did like but two things. A, I think it's like, if you can do like an hour long date for like, let's meet for a drink, you know, I'd always just, or a coffee, like, but to really be like, hey, I can meet you at 8 here and really think of it as an 8-to-9 booking, even if you, obviously you don't tell the person that. But then also I think one thing to, as if you're, you know, whether you're doing online dating or you're just meeting people or whatever, but as you're scheduling, I got a lot of slack from guys who like, they would either want to come to my show or they sort of thought that I was just penciling them in. And I think they really resented my career and how much I had going on. So I think just be mindful of that. And if anyone gives you any blowback about how busy you are and how much you have going on, like drop them, like, you know, like just don't accept that. But I think that maybe to try and see like pockets of time, and also you don't have to tell anyone all the things you have going on, you know, like I think it can be powerful just to be like, yeah, sure, I'm free Tuesday at 7. I want to meet here, you know, like, but because I think sometimes it's easy to almost talk a guy's out of it, you know, or for them to be like, oh, I guess you barely have time for, you know, like, so I don't know. I found it was really useful for me to like really, and sometimes to try to slot a couple dates in a row to not waste hair and makeup, which I know, I mean, that's like cracking.
Dude, that
level.
Is so valid. Are you kidding?
But like, I mean, I guess those are my few thoughts. Maria,
I have a few. So the first thing I would do is take out my calendar today and block out 2 days for the next three, for every single week for the next 3 months. So start thinking 90 days ahead. And I'm not saying you need to book dates ahead, but just hear me out for a second, right? So let's say this caller, she blocks out Mondays and Thursdays, right? Those are now your social nights. You cannot have work on those nights. You're not allowed to. You cannot like you're booked. You're that's it. You're done. You pretend it's class. Pretend it's college. Like you can't not go to class. These are your social days. You have to figure out what those days are, but those are going to be the 2 days that are your social days. Now, social days are not the days that you go out with your friends. They're not, you have your friends on the weekends, right? Right now we're talking about social dates, meeting new people, right? The other thing I want to say now that I've said that, so now you've blocked out all these days for the next 12 weeks, right? I also want you to think about how when we book out dates more than a week ahead, the rate of flakiness, it's exponential, right? People not confirming, the momentum dies down. People are just not interested in going out anymore. And you're going to lose interest. Like that's what always happens, right? Like let's just say it's April 10th. It's not, but let's just say it's April 10th and you schedule a date for April 20th. The chance of you going on that date and being as excited as you were when it got booked, I'm going to bet a lot of money that it's like maybe at the 5%, like it's really running on empty. So when you think about scheduling dates, you have to think about the 48 hour rule. That's what I call it. That's what my team calls it, which is like, if I'm going to online date, I have to be available the next 48 hours. So let's say this caller has blocked out Mondays and Thursdays. She's going to swipe on Saturdays and whoever is available on Monday or Thursday is who she will go out with. And what I would also tell you, dear caller, is to write down in that same piece of paper, the 12 places that you really like, you know, what's your bucket list item in New York? Give me 12 spots. Oh, I really want to go to Harry's Sidebar. I really want to go to Maria's Eurovision party on May 13th, registration coming soon. So, you know, you want to think about like, what are the 12 places that I would like to go? So that way, as you are date planning, you're not wasting time back and forth trying to figure out, oh, where do you want to go? Well, I like this. No. Just, it's okay if you make a suggestion. Hey, I really want to go to Anasa on Battery Park City for dinner. Can you do Monday at 7 p.m.? Like, you can ask him out. That's totally fine because it does not matter online. It's completely flat. Nobody cares. Right. So I just told you like, okay, if you're swiping with someone on Saturday and you have some rapport, you're not booking something out 3 weeks ahead where, oh, I'm busy. You've already blocked out Monday and Thursday. And now you're going to say, hey, can we meet at Anasa? It's this fantastic Greek restaurant, Battery Park City at 7 p.m. on Monday. I'd like to meet you. And we can also just grab dinner. And so like, wow, like look at you managing your calendar, like a girl boss. And now to tap onto what Selena just said is you don't need to tell people how busy you are. Frankly, everyone is busy. That's just a fact, right? So I just want to tell you right now, you're not special. Unless you're an accountant in the next 5 days, you are not special. Everybody is busy in this city, right? And I don't even know if you live in the city. Do you live in the city?
I don't actually.
Where do you live? In DC.
I actually live in Orlando.
Oh, cool.
Okay. Yeah. Just all right. Are you a Disney character?
I mean, some of the same stuff applies. So.
Sure. Of course it applies. Okay. Yeah. And that's what you're going to do. You're going to like apply that, but here's what you're going to do, right? Just like Selena said, you don't need to make yourself seem busy, right? You can just know when you're available. You have to have a different mindset here, right? Which is like, you're on a date on Monday. Well, hey, I'm available. Like here's what I would do if I was on a great first date. This is a lot of fun. Can we do this again? I'm free on Thursday. There is nothing wrong with just putting it out there. And what's he going to say? No, or maybe let me look at my calendar, or yes. Like, you already know what the answers are here, right? But here's you working around your calendar and having a little bit more control of the narrative.
Yeah. Can I add one thing to that
too?
One thing I love doing when I was online dating was like arranging a first date very spontaneously to be like, hey, you want to grab a drink tonight or you want to grab a drink tomorrow night? And sometimes I love the want to grab a drink tonight because I would be in whatever clothing I'd worn that day. Like, so I almost love that sometimes I would go to a first date. I wasn't overthinking it. I wasn't overplanning it. And I was in whatever look I was in, you know, like, and then second date, I would be like, okay, let's do some real hair and makeup, you know, like, but I don't know. I kind of love, cause then it just feels very, it is very spontaneous.
That is my favorite.
It feels lower stakes. Like, yeah. Like that, it feels low
so
stakes.
So much lower stakes. Oh, you know, oh, you live in Chelsea. So do I. Do you want to go grab a cone at Amore and like walk around the neighborhood?
Yeah.
Like, and then it doesn't, not, no one said that online, that dating has to be at like at a Michelin star restaurant. I don't know where people are getting this from.
Oh, that's why I always do a drink or a coffee, a cone. And like with dating, I used to live by the mantra, easy come, easy go, you know, like
where?
Easy come, easy go. Have you ever heard that? Oh, it's just like an old saying. I remember they say it in Sex and the City.
Oh no, I heard, I thought, are you saying that's a venue? It's the name of the venue?
No. I'm saying that's just my mantra for dating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was like, what? Where's that? Is that in the Upper West Side? Because that sounds
like a
brunch place.
Sex shop. Yeah. What?
No, that sounds like a brunch place that like Tina Fey goes to every Saturday. Easy come, easy go.
Easy go.
They would make eggs over easy. Oh my God, Selena.
That would be brilliant.
We need to open up a brunch place called Easy Come, Easy Go. It's go to Sunnyside Eggs. Thank you so much, caller. Did we answer your question at all or with this business idea?
This was super helpful. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I hope so. Good luck.
Easy come, easy go. Let's take our next caller. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker hotline. How can we help you? I forgot what we were doing here. I was going to say podcast, but this is a hotline. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker hotline. How can we help you?
Hi, Maria. I am 39 and I recently got out of a relationship. And a few years ago, I actually froze my eggs. I still would very much like to have children. I've started doing some research into some of the single mother by choice, but honestly, I think there's something very beautiful about doing it with a partner. I'm just wondering if y'all have any guidance or advice, knowing that I'm 39, as I'm, you know, getting back on the apps, if there's anything specific that I should call out or just sort of make known on first dates as I'm meeting new people, that children are still something that I would like to consider.
Follow-up questions before we give you an answer. On your online dating profile, have you selected wants children?
I have, yes.
And on your online dating profile, do you have your real age? Do you say that you're 39?
I do. I say I'm 39, yeah.
on your LinkedIn profile, you have listed yourself as a 39-year-old woman who wants kids. Any man you date knows this. They're not stupid. They know that you're on, there's a pressure. There's like a pressure crunch here, right? There's a time pressure. So I personally do not believe that the purpose of a first date is to ask someone, do you want to have kids? That's not. The purpose of a first date is to go on a second date. That is all it is. That's all it is. And I know Selena is, you know, was 39 when she met her partner. So I know she'll have more to say about this in a second, but I also just want to end with what I'm saying here is that, like, one, you do have enough time if you want to meet someone special. Two, a first date's not the place to do that, right? Because you don't even know this person. Why are you talking about kids? That's weird, right? Like, you would never talk about kids to a person on the subway that you just met. And this is what we're talking about here. And three, the time to talk about your goals, not what they want, but the time for you to reveal what you want is between date two and date three when that comes up. So that's the advice that I'm giving you, which is that you're not going to ask, so do you want to have get married and have kids? Or if you, I don't even know if you want to get married, but let's say, do you want to get married and have kids? No, you're going to reveal, well, I'm 39 years old. I turned 40 in 4 months. And if I'm being honest, I'd really love the next 2 years to include like kids. I would love to be a mom. Notice how you didn't mention them at all. They're not part of this equation. They're just dating you right now. And they can either be excited that that's what you want in the next 2 years, and maybe they get to be a part of it. Or they could be like, wow, that's nice. I don't share in that. I need to go. And that's not, again, a personal thing. That's not about you, right? But you still have to go on dates. Like, there's no way to avoid going on dates.
Right.
Now, if you want, you can hack it by making your first date a FaceTime date. So that way, when you're together in person, that's like date two. But again, you're not going to ask them, do you want kids? You're going to reveal what you want in the next 2 years. Selena, why don't you tell me what you want to say?
I will say I have a social friend who did it on her own and has a 1.5-year-old, and, you know, he's the light of her life, but she has a ton of family support around her geographically, literally, so that she can keep working 9 to 5, and, you know, like, her siblings swap in, her parents are close by. And I think that that has been really crucial to her in doing this.
If you don't have like support, it's really tough to like take care of a kid on your own. I mean, I have friends whose husbands have left them and they're taking care of their kids with zero child support. And that's really tough, you know, especially if you don't have like familiar support nearby, but it's still doable if that's still on the table for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's never been my desire, to be honest. I think, I mean, I'm just sort of dipping my toe into learning more about the just single mother by choice lifestyle and all that. I do have some of the family support, but I think I would ultimately like to have a family with a partner. Mm-hmm. So
I get that. Yeah. That's a totally valid thing that you're saying too, right? But if you're going to start dabbling into like single parent by choice, certainly keep an open mind and take stock of how much support you do have. Because you really need the support like the first 5 years. Like as they get older, as they become, you know, children, they get older, they have a little bit more independence. You start to have a very different relationship. It's the first 5 years that are just really tough because you can't leave them alone. They're in constant supervision. And that's really tiresome. The thing that I like to add in these conversations is that, like, if you're currently dating to find out who's going to be like the father of your kids, that's a lot of pressure to make a right decision. I mean, this pressure exists no matter what age you are, right? But like, it's added pressure, right? Because you feel like there's like a time constraint, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is that if you did have kids on your own, after a few years, when things settle down, you will then suddenly have access to all of the single men in your age group who want to meet someone just like you, because they're also single parents.
Yeah.
So you have a lot to think about, but there's definitely time.
Awesome. Thank you both. This was super helpful. I appreciate it.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Thanks for talking.
All right. Let's take our last question for this week's hotline. Welcome to the Ask a Matchmaker hotline. How can we help you?
Hi, Maria. Longtime listener, first time caller.
Oh,
excited to be here. My question is, I'm in a pretty new relationship. We've met each other's parents, or I've met his parents. He's met my mom. This weekend, we're meeting each other's siblings for the first time. Do you have any good tips for making a good first impression, meeting the siblings, and how that dynamic's going to go?
Selena, do you have siblings?
I have two older sisters. In fact, my older sister, Laurel, is the face of Toyota on the commercials, which is the dumbest trivia ever. But yeah, I have two older sisters, and I love both of their husbands. But yeah, I felt like when I was dating around a lot, I met a lot of siblings, and I found that to be so fun, but also very stressful. You know,
it
like
is stressful
because you want to hit it off right. But I mean, I'm glad you've already met the parents, because then maybe you kind of know the family vibe, like whether they're really jokey and sarcastic or whether they're kind of, you know, like, I think you could never go wrong with like kind of hanging back to get to kind of sniff out what the dynamic is and then responding to that. Like, I wouldn't come out kind of swinging, you know, like with.
No, yeah, I would totally like, yeah, I would totally hold, like I, as extroverted as I am, I would definitely be a lot quieter upon meeting a sibling. I'm like, let me, what's the vibe here? Like,
I know.
Do and you I respect think- your siblings? Like,
exactly. And I mean, is it older siblings, younger? Are they similar ages?
So he's younger than me. So he's meeting my younger sister, who's close to his age, mm-hmm. and then meeting his older brother, who is like a year younger than me.
Okay. Oh, wait, the sibling you're meeting is a boy?
Yeah.
Oh God, you're fine. Oh my God. Are you kidding?
I was going to say, yes, they're like, meeting a sister.
That's not, is his birthday coming up? Like, why are you meeting him?
It's Easter. He's going to be in town for Easter. So we're just having family get together.
That's awesome. Yeah. What has your boyfriend said his brother is like?
He's in the military or was in the military. So they're a little opposite personalities, and he's currently going through a divorce. Ooh. So I know that that is a tough subject that I'm aware of. So at least I know not to ask. Or what not to talk about, but it would be interesting to see that dynamic.
Do you know anything that's like his favorite?
Not really. I know he has a dog, and I'll get to meet the dog, so that'll be fun.
I mean, would this be way too much, but would you want to buy a little dog treat and like bring it?
So I was thinking about like, she should make an Easter basket. Like, I think that would just be such a thoughtful gift. Hold up. Like, that's what I would do, right? So like, if you're meeting the brother here, like, first of all, you should know that like, you're fine. But second, make an Easter basket, because like people like thoughtful gifts. And so in that Easter basket, I would just include, you know, his favorite candy. You're going to ask, you know, your boyfriend what his favorite candy is. And if it's not, then also add your favorite candy, right? Because you're going to be friends, and that's the approach you're going to take. And then you're also going to get treats for his dog. So you're going to have three things in that basket: his favorite candy, your favorite candy, and treats for the dog. And that way you could say like, I want us to be friends. I got you your favorite candy. I'm giving you my favorite candy, and I'm getting your dog candy. And that's it. That's all you gotta do. Just smile and be nice.
Yeah. And also maybe this is a guy who like, you know, he's going through divorce. Like, I wonder if he is just like not needs a little TLC. And by that, I just mean like kind of just to be friendly and kind and open and, you know, like just chatty, like, you know, or also quiet if that, like, I don't know. I just think that people are going through something. I always try to really just like get a read on them and try to respond with a lot of kindness and tenderness.
This is such a great question, by the way.
It is. It is.
I'm trying to remember when I met my sister-in-law, my husband's sister. It's weird, because when I met her, my in-laws hated me.
Oh my God.
They never met me, but they were like, Maria's not from Crete. We don't like her. Crete is an island that my husband is from, and I'm from a different island. And I was like,
that is so damn Greek.
That is like the Greekest shit I've ever said. And it's like funny, because my father-in-law met me and he was like, oh, she's just like us. And I'm like, a Greek woman? Yes.
Also, and then and you're extremely Greek. Like, I can't believe you're complaining. Wrong island. It's like, but she's very like,
you know, it's funny. Like my father-in-law was like on board very quickly. My mother-in-law took her 8 years to like love me, to like me and then love me, which is like really fun to watch that evolution happen, because it got way worse before it got better.
Oh, wow.
But I remember like my sister-in-law, she understood what I was going through. And I never realized until 2019. So I was with my husband for 7 years. And then I never realized like all those years why my sister-in-law was really nice to me. It was because my mother-in-law or my in-laws, it wasn't personal. They were going to find any reason to like whoever their kids brought home. So like even my husband's brother-in-law, he's from Crete, right? Like my sister and my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, they live in Crete together. They're married, right? And but they didn't like him because he's not from the same village.
Oh my God.
You know what I'm saying? Like it was just like the dumbest. So I was just like, oh, it took 7 years. And I was like, that's why she was so nice to me, because she had gone through it with her husband.
Yeah, she knows.
So I was like, she was kind of like, oh, and then I really get along with my sister-in-law. Like I love, I spend 3 weeks with her every summer.
Oh, that's so
and
cool.
Like, yeah, like we're extremely different personalities, but like everything is different about us. Even our parenting styles are different, but like we really respect each other.
That's
and
great.
Like value each other as like friends. And we know that this is for life. Like we both have an understanding that like we are going to be very old biddies one day.
Yeah.
Like at the bar.
Yeah. So you better. Yeah.
Like we need to get along, because when we're 85, we're going to be going to the bars together too. You know, like we're going to go to the beach every afternoon. Like we have an understanding of what that life is going to be like when we're retired already.
Yeah.
And
May I ask one more question of the caller?
Yeah.
How long have you and your boyfriend been together?
Great question.
We went on our first date in January. So.
Okay. Oh, like, okay.
Oh, so 4 months. Like, hold up. So this is like, wow. Oh,
I feel like that's the sort of, I feel like that's the time, at least in my experience, that was the time where it was like it was kind of like, are we in or are we out? You know,
are we in
like,
or are we out? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, should we hang it out?
Meeting the brother.
Yeah. Oh, that's
great.
Have
you told your boyfriend you're asking a podcast what to get his brother for Easter?
Absolutely not.
Oh my God. Because that would be great. That's like so thoughtful. That's like,
I know, that's really lovely.
Like you're such a good, I can tell already that you're like a good person.
Well, thanks.
That's awesome. And do you know what kind of dog he has?
His name is Titan and he's huge, but
so
I think
you get
he's
him a
German
big
shepherd.
Ass bone. Wouldn't it be funny if his name was Titan and he was like a Chihuahua?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Do you have any pets, Selena?
No, no pets. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm really into my home decor. So I keep it. Yeah. I don't know. I love decorating and stuff. So I didn't really grow up with pets. So
I didn't grow up with pets, but I have a dog, Leonidas, and he's old as hell. He's turning 15 this year and I can see it in him. You know what? Before we log off, I actually just got a written question and I'm going to let's go through that really quick and then we'll end this episode.
All right.
So we have a write-in question for the hotline. They ask, at the end of October, I was blindsided by a breakup. We only dated for 4 months, but it was one of my first relationship where I was truly vulnerable and could see a future with. So my heart was shattered. I've taken some time off from dating to give myself time to heal. Now, almost 6 months later, I live in New York City and I think I'm ready to date again. Any tips for getting back out there without the fear of being vulnerable just to get my heart broken? Mm-hmm. Oh, if you're not going to therapy, that fear sucks, but dating requires vulnerability. You can't get away from that. What do you think, Selena?
I mean, I think not to be a broken record, but caller, writer, I totally relate to you and I have been there. And I think that, like we were just saying, that 4 month, it can be so painful because it seems like it's make or break. And sometimes you'll have one partner who thinks it's make and here we go, and one who doesn't. And it's such, you feel like the rug gets pulled out. It's so brutal. I found after I went through a breakup like that, it was really helpful to me to try to just approach everything with a lot of lightness and just like, you know, I mean, I love like something I love, and I don't know if you do, person, but is like just bopping around solo and maybe like grab dinner alone at a restaurant that has a bar. Cause I think when you're alone, you're extremely approachable and random chit chat and conversation can happen. And I don't know, I always like that, especially as it's not a way to have a date, but maybe someone sits down next to you and you have a conversation, or I don't know. I found a lot of value in those kind of spontaneous and subtle ways to meet people without being like, I'm dating. You know what I mean?
No, I totally know what you mean. Like, especially if you head on over to like Eventbrite, like look for stuff that's like not dating related at all. Like I would definitely head up at a karaoke place. I would start hitting up like tequila tastings, like book lectures. Like there's a lot of things to do. As you know, you mentioned that you're in New York City. Like, there's a lot of things to do in the city that have nothing to do with like dating or even ratios. You just need to have that sort of lightness of like getting back out there, period, out there in the social world of being approached. Yeah. I will say that to go back to like what Selena said about the 4 months. So like 4 months on my end as well, we say is like make or break. Like I've noticed with all of my clients in matchmaking, if they hit the 4 months, they're getting married. I can only think of two instances where they didn't in 14 years. And, I think when you find yourself pining over, and you might pine over this for 10 years, because 4 months is a very tricky period, especially when you're blindsided, because in that time, in those 4 months, you've probably pictured a future. Mm-hmm. You've pictured what it would be like to introduce them to your parents. You've pictured a place. What would it be like if you drove back to your hometown together, and what ice cream shop would you take them to? Or where would you do the fireworks if you're visiting your hometown? Like you start to make these like fantasies about this person and what it would be like to date them longer. And if they were more in your life, and then suddenly, according to you, you're blindsided, they're pulling the rug off your feet, and you are left with not so much the sadness that it broke up, but the grief that you don't get to experience these future memories that you had plotted out in your brain. And so I think if you want to get rid of that grief that you might be experiencing, is to start treating it like grief. This person is no longer in your life. It's been 6 months. What you're sad about is the grief of all those things that happened. So then what I would tell you is, now that we know that what that is, what most likely is, when you approach dating, you have to center yourself into the present when you're dating someone. And it's really hard, because when you hit 4 months, that's really hard, right? Because if it's not going to work, it's not going to work. But keeping yourself as present as possible will help you keep the, like, living in that moment, instead of picturing what it will be like when this happens and when this happens and when this happens. I hope that helps you with your fear.
Also, be gentle with your sweet self. That is my personal mantra, and it will
give yourself some grace.
Yeah, exactly. Just be gentle with yourself. Be gentle with your heart, you know?
Yeah. Selena, it was wonderful having you on the Ask a Matchmaker podcast. This was such a blast. This week.
Thank you so much, Maria. This is such a blast. And so great to chat with all of the, you know, all of the guests and give advice. It was so fun.
Oh, I love it. And I'm going to include the links where people can find you on social media, but why don't you give yourself a shout out and also talk about your iTunes album?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I'm a former stand-up comedian, and I have an album on iTunes called Seen Better Days. It's really fun. I'm so proud of it. It came out years ago, but it's a lot of jokes that are timeless about like bachelorette parties and bar fights and my life. So there's that. And then, yeah, I'm on Twitter and Insta and all that fun stuff. Selena Kopick, SelenaCoppock. And then, yeah, I have my parody account, NYT Vows, on Twitter and Insta. And every other Tuesday, I drop a fresh episode of America's favorite podcast about candles, Two Wick Minimum. And literally, we just talk about candles. It's really light. It's really, you know, it's just a labor of love. So Two Wick Minimum is my podcast.
That's amazing. That's
Maria,
so amazing.
I should have you on. Are you into candles?
I would love to be on that. I don't even know what to entail. I have to listen to a few episodes, but that's like amazing. I can't believe you have something like that. And you've had it for years. It's not
I mean, I founded it in 2018.
That's the funniest bit out of everything, that you've been doing this podcast for like 5 years.
Oh, it's so insane. Candles. Yeah. I mean, but I take lengthy gaps off. Like, yeah, I give myself
still. I don't know what you're doing on May 13th, but I am hosting a Eurovision party in Lower Manhattan at Stone Street at Ulysses Bar. Details will be coming out soon. So when this episode comes out, probably a week later, I'm going to have a registration open for that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. The ticket includes your first drink. Are you putting it in your calendar?
I'm literally putting this in my calendar right now. I'm not kidding.
I think it's going to be from 3 to 8 p.m.
Oh, perfect.
We've booked the entire bar and the outside. You can't even imagine. Like, I know the inside fits like 200. And then the venue was like, but we'll give you the whole street too. And I was like, okay, like, cool. This is
awesome.
That's
amazing. So Eurovision, I've learned about it only from you. Should we dress up just for fun and festivity?
You should absolutely dress up for the festivity. Obnoxious. I'm going to be dressed up. I have a co-host, Matt Hayes, who's going to be dressed probably in a tuxedo. Awesome. And we are going to be in the VIP booth, hosting. Like, we'll be narrating as we go, especially, you know, every single song has a gap between you know, because okay. they're setting up for the next song.
Yeah, so you can do the color commentary. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we're going to have, we have a few sponsors, and then we're going to have, and I can't talk about it because I haven't secured all the sponsors yet, but we are going to have prizes. There's also going to be some Eurovision trivia sprinkled in cool. It's gonna be a lot of fun and I'm so excited. And it's also, if you cannot make it, if you don't live in New York, although I've heard from two people that they'll be flying in for this, but if you are not going to be in New York, I want you to know that this is also going to be a live stream. So there will be more details coming soon. And if you don't follow me on Instagram, Matchmaker Maria. All right. That's it for this week. Selena, thanks again for coming.
Thank you so much, Maria. This is such a blast.
And for all of my listeners, thank you so much for listening in each week. I really love you and I appreciate you. And hey, if you enjoyed this episode, why don't you head over and give it a review? I never ask for those. I would love to have a review from you. And that's it. You know the drill. Be lovable, but more importantly, be likable. See you next week.